Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. You're listening to America This Week with Father Matt Malone and Kerry Weber.
Welcome back. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. I am Kerry Weber, along with Father Matt Malone, and we are talking with Father Elias Mallon from the Catholic Near East Welfare Association, and we're chatting with him about global religious liberty today. You can join the conversation at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC, 1-888-322-8465. Give us a call with your questions. Now, Father Mallon, as you write in your article, a lot of people say and believe that Christians are the most persecuted group in the world today. Does that actually line up with what statistics say or what the reality is?
Well, several years ago, I had surgery, and when I came out of surgery, the nurse said, well, on a scale of 0 to 10, what's the pain? And I said to her, I know what 0 is, and I know what 10 is, but I have no idea what's in between. This thing about Christians or any group being the most persecuted, well, the answer to all of that is yes and no, and what does that really mean? I know if you're not persecuted, I know you are. But what's the metric that you measure more or less in terms of suffering? It can be said that as the largest religion in the world and as the geographically most dispersed religion in the world, Christians provide the most targets of opportunity for people who, you know, there's Christians everywhere. Whereas like Rohingyas, well, there's not. Or Yazidis, there's not. Sabaks, there's not. So in that sense, Christians are the most persecuted people in the world because there's so many and they're so dispersed. But I think we have to be careful there suffering can either bring about compassion for other people who suffer, or it can bring with it a certain amount of self-righteousness, like I am the only one, therefore, sure, whose suffering really counts. And to do that would be for us to lose the Christ-like nature of suffering.
Right, right.
Right, and to suffer with.
Yeah.
Right, and you forget to see the person who's actually facing this onslaught. And as you point out in your article, in America, while there are Christians in the Middle East face extinction, there are whole religious groups that face extinction worldwide, that their presence may no longer be felt on this planet.
Yeah, they simply won't be there. The Middle Eastern Christians, and it's a terrible tragedy, and I hope it does not come about that the Christians are gone from the Middle East. But those Christians and those Middle Eastern churches will survive elsewhere.
Right.
And whereas other groups, they will just go out of existence completely.
And what is the specific situation of Christians in the Middle East right now? How bad is it?
Depends where you are. In Jordan and in Lebanon, it's not bad. As a matter of fact, in those places, it's pretty good. In Egypt, it's better than it was, but still not good. In Iraq and in Syria, it's abominable.
Right.
But again, I have friends in Syria who are Muslims, and what they're going through, the grandmother just died because there's just no medical help available. So that it's miserable for everybody in Iraq and Syria. But as I say, and I stress, that Christians don't have what I would call the demographic depth to recover. I mean, if a town has 90% Muslims and 10% Christians and they all have to flee, well, enough of those 90% will go back to start up again, whereas there may not be enough of the 10% to go back and start over again.
And are they being specifically targeted because they are Christians, or is there is what befalling them more like what you would, using some very sterile bureaucratic language, collateral damage?
In places like Egypt, I think it's definitely definitely targeting in the places like Iraq, Syria, and the areas Iraq and Syria. There's some targeting, but it's just everybody. Mm-hmm. I constantly come back that the largest number of victims of Islamic extremism are other Muslims, and so the Christians are in that. There is some targeting, to be sure, by ISIS. ISIS differentiates between Muslims, Sunni Muslims, Shiite Muslims, Yazidis, and Christians, but none of them have it good. I mean, Christians with ISIS have it slightly better than Yazidis, but that doesn't mean they have it good. It's pretty awful, in fact.
What would you say to somebody who argued that that a lot of the religious persecution is by people of other religions, whatever that might be, and that religion is, in fact, fueling more conflict than it is providing some solace?
That's something I have thought a lot about. And to be honest, I find it morally disingenuous when we say, oh, well, they were not really fill in the blank, whatever my group is. They were Catholics who were working in concentration camps in Nazi Germany. Well, they weren't really good Catholics, or they're not really good Muslims. In point of fact, there is no pure conflict. There's nothing that's purely religious, purely economic, purely political. But we do know that religious symbolisms, when they get involved in conflicts, they bring a ferocity with them that you don't find in other conflicts. I think what religions have, all religions on the planet have to do is look not so much at the other, but at themselves, and to see where we promote conflict, where we promote discrimination, and where we at times promote actual persecution. It's only when we face the demons in our own home, in our own house, that we will be able to deal with them in the entire world. So is religion the cause of conflict? No. Does it make them worse? Can it make them worse? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And what are some of the ways in which Catholics have, or Christians have been complicit in religious persecution? Or are today?
Oh, how about the 2-week vacation in Ukraine?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Christians are going at each other there.
Can you explain that for our listeners?
In Ukraine, there, it's beyond my area of competence. There are several types of Orthodox Christians, and there is the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, and relationships inside and outside with the Moscow Patriarchate. But these are Christians who are in conflict with each other, and people are dying, and religious symbolism is being used on both sides.
Right.
As it was done in Northern Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are there any stories from your work with the Catholic Near East Welfare Association that have brought some of these issues home to you, sort of any people that you've met in your work or people that you've encountered that have really helped you to see the people truly affected by this?
I have friends over there and people. I don't travel with Catholic Near East to the Middle East, although I have spent much time in the Middle East. I have friends, as I mentioned, in Syria. Their oldest son was kidnapped by opposition forces. Their son-in-law was trying to get his daughter-in-law out to Turkey. He was arrested by the government. So they have a son who they haven't seen, and we found out where he was for a while. Now we don't know where he is. Son-in-law who was arrested by the government, the sort of the mother of the family, the grandmother, had a stroke, and there was just no help for her, and you couldn't get things in, can't get things out. There's a Dominican sister, a sister of St. Catherine, whom I've met and know, who works in Ain Kawa and Erbil Iraqi Kurdistan. And the story she tells about her own family, her brother having been killed with a car bomb in front outside of his store, her cousins being shot up, basically, by Blackwater.
Blackwater, the private contractor?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And people in their village where they had to flee to in the north, Karakosh, where now there's no more Christians, with children being kidnapped and things like that. So, I mean, the stories, yeah, there's enough of them. As a matter of fact, there's too many of them.
This is America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. We're talking with Father Elias Mallon about the threats to religious liberty across the globe. You can join the conversation at 888-322-8465. I think that a lot of folks who are good-natured and care about these issues, they feel a bit of fatigue, as they read the New York Times, as they listen to this show, as they read a special issue of America. And so I wonder if we could talk about what it is that we can do. What needs to happen now that is not happening? Either at the level of the governmental level or the level of the NGO or the individual level.
I could be very idealistic about it. One of the things that irritates me no end is watching the news, where who did what and broke up with whom in Hollywood, where Aleppo is being bombed flat.
Right.
While I realize you just can't, human compassion can just take so much before shutting down, we do need better information. We need an American public to be better informed on what's going on in the Middle East. And some of the, more less partisan, less partisan, less accusatory reporting and analysis of what's going on in the Middle East. That would be, not just the Middle East, but around the world, that would be an important thing.
So at a minimum, more people should read America's special issue on religious freedom. I'm just kidding. But yes, a more sober and informed analysis is important,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, I mean, people have opinions who, if you, unfortunately, more among Americans than Europeans, I know, that if you gave them a blank map, they couldn't point out where the trouble areas are on a map.
Right. And what needs to happen at the governmental level that isn't happening now? In terms of U.S. policy on these issues,
there's an emotionalizing, and I'm not sure why. There is deep in the United States history nativism, and we still can't face up with the racism that we still have, and this somehow gets mixed in, and so that when refugee becomes a scary bad word,
right,
something that evokes anger and fear, instead of evoking compassion and sorrow, we have a problem.
Yeah.
Right. And so do many of the people fleeing some of these situations make it to the U.S.? Is this a place where they would want to end up? And what do we offer?
The ones I know, no. This idea of the streets of gold. Long ago, far away,
right.
The curtain was pulled back from the wizard, and Al Jazeera has made it quite clear to a number of people around the world, without doing it deliberately, that America is not always the friendliest place to go.
Right. And in the first instance, folks probably want to remain where they and their families have been for generations.
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
And so I think that that's something that's often misunderstood, is that, people are, in a kind of nonchalant way saying goodbye to all that they know and coming in search of some kind of economic prosperity or personal security. If given the choice, they wouldn't want to leave, would they?
Yeah, it's not like, New York, that sounds like a cool idea.
Right.
No, no.
Right.
No, this is not their first choice. Their first choice is to stay home where their families have been for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Right.
Now, you mentioned at your parish, though, there is a Rohingya man who has happened to come here. And can you do you know a little bit about his story?
Well, no, and that's a problem. He's a man in his late 30s, a very nice, very quiet man whose English is... he probably can speak more English than he can understand, and the English he speaks is very difficult for us to understand. And, of course, trying to find someone who speaks Burmese or the language that the Rohingya speak is very difficult, although we're working on it. So he has been with us at the parish now for, well, since about Christmas time. And I heard today that he somehow has found a job, and hopefully, and we're trying to connect him up with Burmese advocacy groups through the UN so that at least he'll have a community where he can speak and we can communicate to make sure he's learning English and things like that. And but I'm very proud, to be honest, of the pastor to have taken him in.
How can our listeners learn more about the Catholic Near East Welfare Organization?
Well, the easiest thing is to go onto our website at www.cnewa.org. We have a blog site every day. We have a magazine that comes out four times a year. The blog site's 121, and the spelled out, and the magazine is called One. And so you can find out what we're doing and whom we're working with in the regions.
Terrific. The article is A Global Peril, The State of Religious Freedom Today. It's in a special issue of America on International Religious Freedom, dated February 29th, 2016. Father Elias Mallon, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here, and thank you for putting out that issue.
Indeed. We were happy to do so. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our associate editor for U.S. politics, Robert David Sullivan, who is going to be talking about the current state of the U.S. presidential election. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.